At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Bastards Hot Stove edition of the podcast. Not a ton of developments so far. The Chris Sale developments keep on going. He signed, basically, they restructured his whole deal, guaranteed a second year. He was only guaranteed one previously. Had they kept the original deal, a top 10 Cy Young finish would have vested an option. But that part, was interesting. That all came out today. We'll probably get into that in the later segment. We're going to be doing mostly a lot of starting pitching talk. So Cody Paulson, Micah Storms with me tonight. Cody, how are you?
Gentlemen, always a pleasure to be on the pod with you all. Micah, it's always a pleasure to be able to work with you, especially in the off season. Doing well. You know, it's been a quiet week, which always, you know, makes people a little unruly on Twitter, for lack of better terms, with the rumors swirling. How can we get this guy? Oh, this other team is interested in him. You know, people playing both sides of the fence. So it's been a fun time to wade through and kind of figure out what's true and what's not true and who do we actually value. How are you gentlemen doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I went back to work this week, so I was off for 12 days for winter break, so that was really nice. And now I'm just kind of worried that Breslow is going to break something when I'm at work, and I don't really have access to my phone when I'm at work because I'm working with 20-plus kids at one time. So I really don't want to wait and sit on news and not be able to, you know, respond to it. So I'm hoping, you know, after 3:30, Breslow can break all the news he wants, but just wait until 3:30.
What you should do, Micah, is you should have a kid that you trust that's not going to, you know, dime you out to the principal. Assign that kid as like the lookout for Red Sox Twitter. That way they're doing it, not you. And you'll get all your information. You got to be a little corrupt. You know, that's how I am. You know, I work around things and, you know, is what it is.
It might be hard to get around the blocked websites to get the students on Twitter or something like that. That might be tricky. Maybe MLB.com, you know, if we could just get instant news from MLB.com.
MLB trade rumors is what I tell all my non-Twitter friends to check out. But
there we go. I'll pick a student and I'll bookmark MLB trade rumors, and that'll be that student's job.
So tell us about this walk you went on. You had this like awakening or something.
Yeah, I would describe it as an epiphany. I was walking my dog Cooper, as I do every single night. And here in just outside of Philadelphia, the walks are quite cold now at this time of the year. So I'm walking a little faster. But I started to think, because I had put on Twitter a couple days ago, I think it might have been yesterday, that I finally come around to the idea of being all right with the Red Sox trading one of Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Teal, or Roman Anthony. I'd be fine with that if it's to acquire a starting pitcher. It took me a long time to get to that point. And I'm not going to say I would love a deal like that, because I still think it would be painful, but I could deal with it. But then I started to think about the Red Sox championship teams. And I have a list of names for you, and I want to see if you can find what all of the names have in common. And I think you'll be able to put it together. But it kind of shocked me, because I went through every single championship winning team that the Red Sox have had from 2004, 2007, 2013, and 2018. And here's the list. Pedro Martinez, Curt Schilling, Derek Lowe, Josh Beckett, Jake Peavy, Rick Porcello, Chris Sale, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Nathan Eovaldi. What do all of those pitchers have in common?
Ding, ding, ding. They were all traded for. They were not free agents.
Bingo. Okay. Now, I know a lot of people talked about how the 2018 rotation was full of pitchers that the Red Sox acquired, but I really never thought about the idea of going all the way back and looking at every single World Series team. But every single World Series team that this team has had the luxury of hitting big on trades and acquiring their rotation. And it's not just the number four and the number five starters. These are the top tier pitchers that lead your rotation. In 2004, Pedro Martinez was obviously not acquired that year, but he was acquired before, but he was still your ace. Curt Schilling, they acquired him prior to that season in 2004, and he was a two-time Cy Young runner-up in the National League. So, again, a big-time pitcher. And they also acquired Derek Lowe via trade, previously. But still, three out of the five starting pitchers in 2004 were acquired via trade. If you go to 2007, they still had Curt Schilling from the 04 trade, but they still had him. And then they also had Josh Beckett. Josh Beckett was their ace that year. So they acquired their ace in 2007 via trade. Now, 2013 is kind of the outlier. They did acquire a starting pitcher. They acquired Jake Peavy. Now, he wasn't fantastic for the Red Sox, but he still kind of, helped them get to the playoffs, and he made three playoff starts. But they really didn't have to acquire a starting pitcher in 2013 because they actually had homegrown starting pitchers. They had John Lester and Clay Buchholz, who were the anchors of that staff. And if that's what happens when you are actually able to develop your own starting pitchers, you don't have to go via trade as crazy as they've done in the other years. And then in 2018, they acquired Rick Porcello a couple years before, Chris Sale a couple of years before. Eduardo Rodriguez was still a trade acquisition. They acquired him when he was in Double-A. And then Nathan Eovaldi was the big one in the middle of the season. So every single World Series championship winning team was loaded, except for really 2013, but still had one. But they were all loaded with acquiring pitchers via the trade. And I think that it has really been one of the key formulas for this team and this organization over the last 20 years that has made them the most successful baseball franchise, that there has been over the last 20 years, because no one has more World Series rings than them. So I think if we're looking at the Red Sox trying to get back to that, it has to be via trade. And I understand fans love the prospects, and I'm someone who really loves prospects myself. But if we look at the formula of success, and there's no reason not to look back to those four World Series teams, they had to give something up to get that top-tier pitching. And you can say, oh, go get the top-tier pitching on the free agent market. If you look at the top nine starting pitchers in terms of AAV, there's like one really good starter in that group. So you can chance it and say, well, we're going to try to get someone, but the chances are that contract is not going to work. The trade market is so much, I think it's such a better guarantee of getting good value for, giving up prospects. And I think that is what the Red Sox have to do. They may not acquire an entire starting rotation this offseason, but they could get one piece that really helps this team get to where they need to be in the next couple of years. And it's via trade. I really believe that. It's the formula. I'd never put it all together in my mind. Maybe, you guys have, maybe other people have, but I just, for fans to hold on so tightly to the top three prospects in particular, chances are one of them, maybe two of them, really doesn't pan out to be the superstar that many Red Sox fans think they're going to be. So go get a starting pitcher and get a piece. It might not be, you might need more pieces, but it's at least one piece right now. And then hopefully you can keep adding to the rotation in the next offseason or at the trade deadline, whatever. But go and make a deal, because that is what has worked for the Red Sox in the past.
You want to go, Cody?
Sure. I think it's a very insightful take for sure. To be able to draw the lineage back to 04, 07, 13, and 18, I think is additional legwork that is awesome, not to mention then we get a flex on the fact that we've got four World Series, which, you know, is always nice to think about. But if you look at the takes that we've had over the past couple of off seasons, it's, okay, go get a starting pitcher in free agency. Who are you going to get, right? All the good pitchers never really reach free agency, right? Like, you look like an Aaron Nola, it was a restricted free agency. Obviously, the Phillies, you know, stashed him up and kept him in town. And then, you know, that's why there was such a premium on a player like Yamamoto. And, you know, this market is so slow developing. But largely the top tier, you know, ace type pitchers never really make it to free agency because teams know what they have and they know that they're a dime a dozen. And if you're gonna get them, you got to pry them away. And so that, I mean, I think that's incredibly insightful. I just guess, lack of better terms, research work to just be like, all right, fine. One thing that we can think about here too is, you know, this is Breslow, right? So those prized prospects aren't necessarily his prized prospects. You see this with GMs, you see this with, you know, other front offices in different sports too, right? Whenever they come in, they try to clean house, they try to get their guys in the building. They want to, you know, work with the players that they want to work with the players that they see something special with. So, you know, maybe we don't hold an Anthony or a Mayer or a Teal as, you know, near and dear to our heart, you know. And I think, you know, perhaps out of all three of those, it would hurt me the most to see Teal leave, just because the hype around a catcher, I think, is a little bit more unique than it is in other position players. But, you know, that's a topic for a different cold night, perhaps. But that is definitely something that I hadn't considered, you know, that all of those World Series teams were not necessarily built upon, but bolstered by a trade. And so, you know, with the Red Sox putting the line out there that they're not necessarily interested in free agents and they're more interested in the trade market, might think that they're on to something of a similar mindset, which is, you know, a new reason to get excited for the last couple of weeks of the offseason before spring training starts.
So, Micah, you made a lot of excellent points there, and it's still tough to read which way the Red Sox will go. I think the consensus is they are going to add another starter, and I don't think you pay Lucas Giolito $19 million a year without another starter coming in, whether it's someone we're excited about, you know, could be another story. But it seems like they're not going to go over the luxury tax this year. That's almost certainly not going to happen. And listening to Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam earlier, they're speculating that they might not even go near the $225 million cap that Sherrington was mandated last year. So if that's the case, your suspicion is probably right. There could be a trade more likely than a big free agent signing. Now, I'm not in love with any free agent out there. I can find stuff to hate about Montgomery. I can find stuff to hate about Snell. Ultimately, I can live with both of them under, you know, the right circumstances. But Jesus Luzardo is my top desired target. It was Corbin Burns, but because of Scott Boras, they've already said, yeah, there's not likely going to be an early extension. With Dylan Cease, I can't remember if I mentioned this on the last podcast, the Reds inquired to the White Sox, what would it take to get him? And this is what the White Sox wanted. They wanted the Reds' number 2 ranked prospect, number 3 ranked prospect, number 4 ranked prospect, and number 6 ranked prospect. The 2, 3, and 4 ranked prospects are in the MLB top 100, so they're highly coveted. Top 100 in all of Major League Baseball. So that's an insane package. And you had two other teams express interest in getting him. One was the Los Angeles Dodgers, and then they pivoted to Tyler Glasnow. And then the other was the Atlanta Braves. And guess what? They're like, I'll take my chances on Chris Sale for apparently 2 years now. Rather than, you know, blow up my farm system for a guy like Cease, who's a little bit finicky and only has 2 years of control. Jesus Luzardo has 3 years of control. So if you can acquire him and then perhaps work out an extension maybe after the first year, I think that's the way to go. And then you're hoping for the best with Giolito. I'm a cautious optimist that it'll work out okay. Bayo isn't going anywhere. We can still develop a guy in the next year or two. You know, maybe Tanner Houck is going to be this stud that, you know, is going to shock us all under Andrew Bailey. I'm still kind of hoping for that. Who knows if it'll happen. With my luck, you know, he'll be in the trade package for Lizardo. But, you know, if it happens, so be it. But I think you could put Jaren Duran and Houck in a package with one of those big three prospects and then maybe a mid-level prospect. That should get you a pretty nice starting pitcher. And it makes sense. And it keeps the payroll down. And you could trade Kenley Jansen and then maybe fill another need. Teoscar Hernandez still out there. I'm almost positive he ain't coming to Boston at this point, but I could be wrong. But it just seems like that's where they're heading. And as long as they add a starting pitcher of relevance, I'm okay with that. Eventually, I don't want to go over the luxury tax. I don't want to be the team that always does it. I think you can streamline it with some smart executives that know what they're doing and maybe occasionally exceed it. But yeah. And here's the other benefit. If you stay below the deadline and you leave yourself plenty of room between your payroll and the luxury tax, you could have a pretty explosive July on the trade market if things fall together. So we're not used to being competitive by then, but I think moves could be made to get us there.
Yeah, I think over the last couple of years, like if you look at a lot of Bloom's tenure, he didn't really have a lot of the prospect capital needed to go out and make a move like this. Like the farm system he inherited was not very strong. And 100% Tristan Casas would have been in a deal to acquire a front of the rotation arm. And I have to be honest, I'm kind of glad we have Tristan Casas and not anyone that we could have acquired at that time. Just seeing, obviously we have the luxury of knowing that the last couple of years have not really been competitive. So we would have, you know, used the really good years of a pitcher that we acquired and gotten rid of Casas. So I'm kind of glad that that worked out, that we have Casas here. But what is the point of having Teal, Anthony, and Meyer break into the big leagues if you have no pitching to keep runs off the board? You know, we've seen Red Sox teams that can score like crazy, but if you can't hold the other team off the scoreboard, it really doesn't matter. So you need to find a balance where you can acquire some pitching, but you can't completely deplete the farm system. That's not what I'm saying when I make it, you know, when I want them to make a deal. They need to still be cognizant of still developing the farm system and having a nice group of prospects, but they can't all break into the big leagues. I truly don't think all three of them can fit on this Red Sox roster moving forward. For one, all three of them are left-handed hitters. I just don't like the fact that all three are left-handed hitters to match with Casas and Devers and whoever else may still be on the team at that time. I think that could be a problem, but I the trade market is definitely the area I think they're going to go. And you mentioned Lizardo, Terry. I think obviously there isn't a huge track record. You only have one season in which he pitched over 100 innings. He threw 178 last year. But if you're acquiring a starting pitcher who just finished his age 25 season, I don't know how many pitchers actually would have multiple 150-plus inning seasons under their belt. There might be a couple out there, but probably not that many. So I think I'm willing to take a shot on him. The stuff is electric. Do you both remember? I think it was the game that Bayo took his no hitter into the seventh or eighth inning against Miami. But the opposing pitcher that day was Jesus Lizardo, and he was incredible against the Red Sox. And obviously, you're not going to go off of one start and say, oh, that's the guy I want to have. But it sure is nice to know that that one start he had in Fenway with Miami, he was absolutely dominant and that the Fenway bright lights didn't scare him away. So I'm all on board with Lizardo. I know a lot of people, when I tweeted out saying that, you know, Jesus Lizardo and Jordan Montgomery would completely change the perspective of the Red Sox, which is obvious, but some people do not like Lizardo. And I think he's absolutely worth the flyer on getting rid of one of your top prospects. I think the deal that you mentioned, Terry, with, you know, Duran, Hauk, one of the big three and another one, I think that would be a really intriguing package. Like, that would make Miami better in the short term, you know, with their offense better in the short term with so much upside. And I think that's the type of deal that Miami should be looking to make. So I would be all in for Jesus Lizardo coming to the Boston Red Sox.
I got some bad news, and I feel like I walk into this all the time. Guess who Lizardo's agent is?
Boris.
Yeah, Boris. So that could complicate an extension. But, you know, Lizardo's had a pretty good couple of years in a row here, an ERA in the mid to lower threes. Strikeout rate per nine above 10. So very, very good there. He always had the potential. Like, when he was coming up in Oakland, he was a very hyped prospect. And it just didn't happen. And then it went to Miami, first year, not so good. And then years two and three seemed to figure it out. So this could be a sell high situation for Miami. Perhaps that's how they look at it. They definitely do need some offense in that lineup. I mean, after trading, after trading for Arraez, I mean, they really needed a little bit more. And I think Duran, I mean, imagine having him and who's that? Who's their center fielder?
Chisholm.
Yes, Chisholm. Man, imagine having those two guys, you know, in your lineup, just raising hell on the base pass. So I think that could be a pretty, attractive trade package. And they've got a great pitching program. So if Tanner Houck has a problem the third time through the order, I'm sure they'll be supremely confident they can resolve that. I'm kind of hoping we will be, you know, if he isn't, you know, in a package. But real quick, though, this is one of my favorite trades ever in Red Sox history. Do you guys know the circumstances of the Beckett Lowell trade where we got those two sent Hanley to the Marlins? It's different. The Epstein dynamic to it. No. Okay. So you guys were fairly young. I mean, this is almost 20 years ago. So, you know, you guys are what, 11 or 12 at that point? Oh, actually, well, Mikey, you weren't even 10, I guess. But here's the interesting thing about that trade. The Red Sox get bounced in the first round of the playoffs that year to this is 2005, to the Chicago White Sox. And the White Sox actually ended up going to win it all and broke their own curse that year. Halloween night, Theo Epstein quits his job and leaves Fenway Park in a gorilla suit. That way nobody would recognize him. So he leaves. And they didn't replace him right away. They had a general manager by committee. Jed Hoyer was in that committee. So was Ben Sherrington. A couple other guys. I have an article here. Nobody I'm really familiar with. Bill LaJoy and Craig Shipley were... That foursome was basically in charge of making all the moves. And then they went to the winter meetings and tried to trade Hanley Ramirez, but couldn't find a dance partner in the winter meetings in December. Epstein wasn't back yet. And then Hanley Ramirez was always untouchable to Theo Epstein, never wanted to trade him. But that committee of four Red Sox executives did it. They sent him to Miami and brought back Josh Beckett and Mike Lowell. And then Epstein came back a couple weeks later, and the rest is history. And the cool thing about it was, I mean, Epstein in the long run wasn't super spiteful about it. Mike Lowell got an extension from Epstein after being the 2007 World Series MVP. And then Josh Beckett in 2010 got like a 4 or 5 year extension, of which I think he only played a couple of years on before that infamous Dodgers trade. But just a weird trade in Red Sox history that led to a lot of history after. I was more of a Fairweather fan back then. From 04 to 07, those were the years I was a corrections officer, so I was working second shift a lot of the time. And it wasn't until I got done that in 07 to where, you know, the Red Sox were like a nightly thing for me. But yeah, I just wanted to share that. If we have any younger listeners joining us, I think they might find that interesting. But all right, so a guy that I'm all out on, and we talked about this before we come on, Shota Imanaga. I don't want anything to do with him. I want a proven guy, a guy we've seen, you know, for at least a couple of years, have success on this side of the ocean. I was willing to take the chance on Yamamoto because the dude is off the charts, and I'll probably be willing to take that chance for Sasaki when the time comes. But Imanaga, older guy, right around 30 years old, doesn't throw particularly hard. The best years of his career are over. You know, you got Yamamoto, who's 25. We've already missed out on, you know, those 5 years, you know, with Imanaga. And, you know, finally getting out of that Chris Sale contract, you know, albeit in the final year of it, I'm just tired of having remorse over some of these long-term deals. And I'd rather another team take the plunge on Imanaga. The Yankees are out on him as well. They're not even going to pursue him. The teams that are listed to be in on him, the Cubs, the Mets, the Giants, and the Red Sox. I'm pretty skeptical about the Red Sox because, I mean, Imanaga is projected to get over $100 million. Previously, it was 80 to 85, but I think we've got the Shohei and the Yamamoto effect here, you know, where the markets are getting inflated for these Japanese pitchers. So that's just one guy I want to stay away from. I'd rather have Montgomery for 6 years, even though I think that's too long. I'd at least rather have him or, you know, a shorter, you know, 3-year deal for Blake Snell at really high annual value. I think that's a super long shot as well.
But yeah, you know, it is tough to commit a lot of resources and capitals to a player that hasn't done it, especially at an age that isn't uncommon, right? You know, as you mentioned, Terry, the Yamamoto deal was particularly appealing because you're getting that, you know, age 26 season, right? You don't very often get a crack at a upper level elite pitcher, you know, coming off their age 25 season, where you could sign them to those 10, 12 year deals that we're seeing in the marketplace and feel good about it, right? You know, you're getting 10, 12 year deals for guys that are 28, 29, 30 plus, and it's like, man, are we really going to be paying a pitcher, you know, at their age 38, 40, 40, whatever seasons? So, you know, you could definitely make the argument that Yamamoto was worth that risk, you know, even with the opt outs or the flyer or whatever it ends up being. But, Imanaga, 30 plus, doesn't have high velocity to begin with, you know, then he really has to become, you know, an off-speed specialist. And those guys usually end up getting figured out, you know, a couple of times, you know, through the league, for lack of better terms, right? You know, they might have had a good first year, maybe a year or two, but eventually, you know, unless you've got that Maddox-like control, they're going to figure it out, and then you're going to get hit hard, right? Because there's one thing you can't replicate, and it's velocity, right? Everybody kind of loses it, and when you lose it, you got to figure out other ways to get outs, and we've seen that go poorly for other pitchers. The Snell option, shorter deal, higher AAV, I think we're starting to talk ourselves more and more into that being a serviceable, I guess, outcome for this offseason. I think that'd be pretty exciting, especially a pitcher that has pitched well in this division before. You know, I think that's another feather in the cap. It's not necessarily a requirement, but it definitely doesn't hurt, right? Montgomery having the ability to pitch well again in the division and in the big moments, I think makes him, you know, another attractive option. But Imanaga, I don't think this rotation as it's currently constructed, you know, has the ability to take on that risk. You know, we kind of got a couple of holes in the ship, and we've only got one bucket, so we got to be smart with the way that we allocate our energy and our resources.
The Yankees, I believe, stated that the reason they were out on Imanaga was because he's kind of a fly ball pitcher, and fly balls in Yankee Stadium usually don't end too well. But I just feel like if that's the case, if that really is kind of his makeup, then I don't think Fenway really serves him any better. To me, the San Francisco Giants seem like a slam dunk with that big ballpark. They've been trying to get free agents to go to San Francisco all off season and in previous off seasons. So I think he could be a good fit for them, but I'm with you, Terry and Cody. I just don't see Imanaga a fit, especially at that dollar amount. The $100 million is kind of crazy. And, you know, I think the Chris Sale extension, I mean, I know it's technically for one guaranteed year and they could technically pick up another year, but the fact that Chris Sale, who's made 31 starts in 4 years, can get, you know, $20 million, you know, a year, that's kind of mind-boggling to me. Like, and I think it kind of really, like, it inflates the market, because I really think, like, Jordan Montgomery's got to be sitting here going, well, Chris Sale just got paid $20 million, and he's never healthy. And when he's healthy, he's really okay. He's not he hasn't been anything special. Jordan Montgomery can go out and throw 180 innings with a, you know, a mid threes ERA. He's got to be sitting there going, well, I want $30 million a year, because look at what you just gave Chris Sale. And Imanaga's agent, like, look at his numbers over in Japan. Like, he's got good stuff. You know, you can look at the advanced metrics of these Japanese pitchers, and you can kind of compare them to, you know, other free agents. And they have to be sitting there going, you know, my client's 30 years old and he has, you know, good stuff. Why not him get 20 to 25 million a year? Like, I just feel like those types of deals, and I thought the Glasnow deal as well, it just really, it just skews the pitching market. And I think you're really going to have to spend to get one of these guys, unless everybody just waits until the very last moment and puts all the pressure on the players to have to sign. But I just think teams are going to cave, and they will give these free agents at least a high AAV. Some of these guys might not get the years they're looking for, but I do think the AAV will be there for many of these free agents.
I'd love to see that just be a trend. You know, if they're 30 years old, pay them more per year and just give them 3 or 4 years. It's a better league. Free agency is better. And I think it's better for the players too. I mean, if you got the confidence, you're going to be able to go out there and sling it at age 34, 35, 36, 37. You'll still get perhaps a couple of those Scherzer, Verlander deals, Charlie Morton type deals even. I mean, his wasn't quite as explosive. I think he was only making 15 or 20 million a year, you know, signing 2 years at a time. But I'm all good with that. And you mentioned Chris Sale, and actually he does have a fully guaranteed 2 year deal worth $38 million. There is a club option for 2026 at $18 million. So we'll see how it goes. And it's structured weird money wise though. The Red Sox are still picking up, I guess, the 17. I got excited for a second. I thought, oh my God, are we out of that now? Cause it's a new contract, but apparently not. So the Braves are only paying like $2 million or something like that of this year's salary. Next year's will be the full 18 or 19. And then, you know, I'm assuming the option year will be, none of that's going to be deferred, but I think it's insane. It sounds like that this was worked out. There was a tentative agreement before the trade. Sale had to waive his 10-5 rights. And what that means is if the player's been in the league for 10 years and with his current team for the last five, 10-5 rights means a player has the right to veto a trade. And so, you know, Chris Sale had a lot of leverage, you know, whether or not he was going to take that trade or not. And I think the Braves probably tentatively said, okay, yeah, we'll do a 2-year deal for roughly around this dollar amount. And, you know, we'll get the rest of it worked out after the trade. And, you know, and then today the news came out. And I think that's insane. I just like, I was okay coming in. I was actually almost giddy that it was the final year of the Chris Sale deal. I'm like, my expectations aren't high. It's probably not going to go well, but at least it's the last year. At least it's the last year. And now they've got two more years. I mean, I just couldn't take that. Like, two more years of Chris Sale. He's going to have a weird injury. The dude popped his fractured a rib with his delivery. And then the next year, which was this previous season, cracks his collarbone or something. Because his body just, I don't know if he, you know, maybe his bones just are a little more brittle. I mean, that can happen, but who knows what the next injury is going to be. It's going to be something fluky that just makes no sense, but it's going to happen. And the Braves are going to learn that one the hard way.
Cody and Terry, what would have been, I'll start with you, Cody, what would have been your reaction if today, or I would say last week, Red Sox still have Sale, and you get the alert, the Red Sox extend Chris Sale for another year with a club option for 2026. Cody, what would go through your mind if that would have happened? Because the Braves did it, and I just feel like Red Sox fans would have just lost their mind.
Yeah, I mean, I would have immediately gone to Twitter just to watch it all burn. You know, Terry, I think you're right. Getting through this last year of a deal, I think, would have been, you know, a certain sense of jubilation, right? Because there's a lot that has been attached to this 5-145 outside of just Chris Sale himself, right? You know, the financial inflexibility that we have had because of this deal. You know, if we had a better rotation like the Braves do, you know, could we stomach a player that might not make his full 28 to 30 starts? I think that extension looks a lot more advantageous, but with the way that the Red Sox currently are constructed, if we would have extended him, you know, I think Breslow just looks at the world and says, I like to watch it burn, you know, and just laughs at us and be like, you know, enjoy your misery, keep complaining about something or you know, or something to that fact, because there's no reasonable way you can talk yourself into an extension with the way that the Red Sox currently are, right? You can't count on a player like Chris Sale to take the ball as often as a rotation like the Red Sox are would require a player like Chris Sale to do, especially for that money. You know, I think the Braves are following the Dodgers model. They're doing that deferred money. I think I saw something like the $10 million that they're picking up this year is going to be deferred to like 2039 or something crazy, which, you know, these are all just made up numbers to me at this point. But it would have been a very, very difficult, I guess, mental gymnastics to do if you would have seen Red Sox extend Chris Sale for 2 years. You're like, well, he's ours now. So, like, we got to figure out a way to make, you know, put lipstick on a pig, but it would have been ugly.
The thing I would have lost my mind about was we would have exactly repeated history in 2019 by not making him pitch that final year. That's what you do with an injury-prone guy. And if he pulls it all together and wins the Cy Young, then okay, pay the penalty after and give him the big contract that you were hoping to avoid. In a situation like this, that's my approach. Why do it a year early? If he has the same exact type of injury and misses 2 months and doesn't come back until August, I would just destroy myself. Like, you know, so that's why it was kind of stunning that the Braves did it. I'm like, they just made the same mistake Dave Dombrowski did in 2019. Just imagine if Sale doesn't get that extension from Dombrowski. He has a UCL tear by August, and they're hoping to rehab it. He had the PRP injections. Ultimately did have Tommy John in February. Like, first week of spring training, they're like, oh, Tommy John. So what does Chris Sale get? What's his what's his contract after 2020?
Probably a one-year pillow contract, a prove-it deal, exactly. And then he's back out there. Maybe a two-year deal with a player opt-out, something like that. But you're not getting, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal until you show you can come back. I mean, maybe there was a team out there crazy enough to do it, but I mean, the Red Sox were crazy enough to do what they did. I mean, he wasn't fully healthy at the end of 2018 and they gave him an extension. So maybe there was a team out there that would do it, but typically you don't see teams give extensions to players unless they know they are really healthy and are going to be a guy they can count on.
He had a combined 545 strikeouts in 2017 and 2018. That's off the charts. One of those 2 years was 308 strikeouts, and that'll probably never be done again. The pitchers just don't pitch enough innings to do that. So those were the 2 years of leverage Chris Sale had going into that extension, and he only got $145 million compared to David Price, 7 years, $210 million. I mean, Chris Sale was about the same age. He was 30 years old when he signed that extension. So it's like Chris Sale knew, I better get my money now while I can, because the dude broke down in 2018, like Micah said. He had some shoulder fatigue, and then he had that controversy in the playoffs. I forget if it was in the, I think it was in the ALCS, where he went to the hospital, got treatment. He jokingly said it was his inflamed, infected belly button piercing. But I think there was, I don't remember if it was reports or speculation, it was his shoulder. And he might have taken too much ibuprofen and it messed up his stomach. But, you know, so even Chris Sale knew there were red flags with himself, and he took a really team-friendly deal. And that was the argument from all the support. I eviscerated that contract right away. I'm like, he's coming off a shoulder injury. He's probably going to have Tommy John at some point. Make him pitch that final year. But everybody said, oh, it's so team friendly. It's only 5 years. And I knew it was going to be bad. I just didn't think it was going to be as bad as it actually was. I mean, you never got a full season at any point in that deal ever. So, you know, Pablo Sandoval, at least in recent memory, worst position player, offensive contract of all time. And then Chris Sale, the worst pitching contract extension, or whatever you want to call it, of all time. That's hard to believe. And still, after all these years, this will be his 15th year in the majors, and he's got a postseason ERA of 6.35. Terrible postseason guy. So he probably will get into the Hall of Fame, believe it or not. I mean, just some of those categories are off the charts, but it's not going to be because of these epic October, you know, moments, you know, those signature Curt Schilling, Pedro Martinez, John Lester type postseason. And John Lester won't even get in the Hall of Fame for that matter. But let's look at his stats.
Did he ever make the postseason with the White Sox, or did he only make it to the postseason with the Red Sox?
I don't believe he did. I think
because, like, even in 2016 or so, he was breaking down. I remember he got shelled by the Astros. Like, Drew Pomeranz was our ace that postseason, and I was like, "Well, we're just cooked if we're
yeah.
giving the ball to Big Drew."
That was 2017, but yeah,
or 17. Sorry.
Yeah, and the answer is no. He did not make it into the playoffs with Chicago. So it's all been with the Red Sox. And I think his best performance, well, let's see, in 2021, he went only 8 innings. So that was 8 innings across 2 outings, gave up 3 earned runs. So that's a 3.38, but he didn't go far into there. Against the Yankees, actually, that was his best. He pitched game one of that series in 2018, went 6 1/3, only gave up 2 runs. That was his best game in the postseason. But man, what a, that, it really couldn't have gone any worse. it really couldn't have. So, but all right. Any final thoughts before we wrap?
I'm just wondering if Chris Sale is actually good. That's that's what I'm wondering, because you look at his numbers. They just, he had 2 good months and 2 absolutely atrocious months. And for him to get that deal with the durability concerns and the performance concerns, you know, I'll root for him. I will always be a Sale supporter. I loved Sale Day. I wanted Sale Day to be a thing so bad over the last couple of years. But it didn't work out. I'm so glad he's not on the Red Sox. If he wins the Cy Young this year, I will say good for you, Chris Sale, but I'm glad you're not in Boston. I just didn't want to go through that again. It was just because of how awesome he was in you know, his first couple of years with the Red Sox, seeing him just break down and get frustrated and struggle, that was painful to watch. It really was. He was one of my favorite pitchers the Red Sox had that I've seen. And I'm just glad that we don't have to go through another year of tough Chris Sale days.
I agree with that. I don't have any ill will towards Chris Sale. If anything, we owe him a big thank you for opting out, or you know, agreeing to the trade rather. And you know, if you hate the Dodgers as much as we do, you're gonna have to root for the Braves. I mean, who's their chief rival gonna be in the National League? Yeah. So is Chris Sale Hall of Fame bound? Because he's gonna have, let's see, he's got currently just under 2,200 strikeouts. I think 2,000 is really kind of the benchmark in that category, and I'm guessing probably he'll have 2,400 when all is said and done. His career WHIP 1.04, career ERA 3.10, his career strikeout per nine 11.1. I think he's in.
I think he's going to be synonymous to like an Andrew Jones type, to where his 10-year initial dominance was so high, but they're going to be like, I don't know, man. He turned 30 and he fell off or whatever, because the BBWA is the worst collection of human beings on the planet. A bunch of wet blankets, in my opinion. I don't think he gets in just because people want to see you have like an 18-year all-star career. They're like the job market, right? They want you to show up with 20 years of experience so they can offer you an entry-level job. The Hall of Fame in baseball, to me, is the worst thing that has happened to sports. It is too elite. It is unbelievably difficult to get into. And you have a bunch of players that deserve to be in that are not in. And it is incredibly frustrating. Additionally, Chris Sale is going to be the highest paid player on the Braves, which I think is absolutely hilarious. Even, well, you know, not this year withstanding, because this is obviously a Red Sox contract, but next year, and when that club option kicks in at $22 million, it's going to be tied with Matt Olson for the highest paid player on the Braves. So that'll be fun for them to deal with.
I actually kind of like that the Baseball Hall of Fame is the elite of the elite. I kind of like that personally. I think like the NFL Hall of Fame, I feel like they just put every single player in the Hall of Fame. Their Hall of Fame classes are massive. But they also have so many positions. So I guess whatever. But I don't think Sale's in. I think if you're gonna focus on his 10-year window, him not having a Cy Young Award, in my opinion, it takes away from that 10-year window. He is probably one of the best pitchers to ever not win a Cy Young, in my opinion. But I think if you're going to focus on a 10-year window and him not really have a second half of a career, he has to have a Cy Young, in my opinion, if not two, to get into the Hall of Fame, because the longevity is just not there. But if he puts together a couple of good years in Atlanta, I will feel very differently. But I think he does need to have a little bit of a resurgence here at the back end of his career to make a case and get in.
The number of wins is way low. It's only 120 wins, so that's not going to look great. But as far as the Cy Young goes, he's got 7 years in a row. So from 2012 through 2018, he finished second through sixth in all of those years. So he was somewhere between second and sixth. So, and if he just didn't break down, he wins it in 2017 and probably 2018. His own lack of durability is what did him in those 2 years. Cody?
What's going to be interesting, though, when they talk about Chris Sale is it's not going to be that he had a top six finish for 10 straight years. It's going to be that he didn't win a Cy Young, right? Like, that's how they do these perceptions. Additionally, do you guys know how many Major League Baseball players there's been in the history of the MLB?
23,000.
Give or take, yeah. It's 26,000 and change, right? So if you were to put everybody that played in the MLB in the history of this sport into an average stadium today, 60% attendance.
Okay, that's an interesting thought.
And I'm, you know, go ahead, Micah.
No, go. You finish, Cody.
It, like, I understand that, like, it is supposed to be the Hall of Fame, right? It is supposed to be the elite of elite, absolutely. But the point of the Hall of Fame is, can you tell the story about this sport with these players or without these players, right? And a player like Andrew Jones or a player like Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens, I know steroids aside or whatever, but don't act like those writers didn't profit on the articles that they were writing during that time. That's a whole other side of the story. But you can't tell the sport, the history of the sport without certain players. Make it a Pete Rose or, you know, other players who I'm forgetting at the moment. That to me is more important than your career statistics, because certain things happen, right? You're going to get a freak injury, right? We are lucky that we got as much of Mickey Mantle as we did. You know, he's one sprinkler away from his career ending, especially back in that time. And it's, I mean, you absolutely can make the argument that he would have been a Hall of Famer before that knee injury. But if he doesn't come back from that, the BBWA leaves him out. And you can't tell the story of baseball without the home run chase in 1961 without Mickey Mantle, right? So, I mean, to me, it's too hypocritical and it's too elitist. I think these players go through so much. They sacrifice so much. They put their bodies on the line each and every day for our enjoyment. That's all it is. It's for our enjoyment and, you know, the reward of being able to play a game for a living. They deserve to be immortalized.
So, Micah, real quick. So I'm a really huge anti-steroids guy. So I'm anti-Bonds and Clemens. Where are you on those two? Because you haven't been here for a Hall of Fame yet.
If Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame, which he is, then those other players who did steroids should be in the Hall of Fame, because Bud Selig knew that those players were doing steroids. So if you're going to put Bud in when he was running the whole thing and basically, you know, not watching or not paying attention, but enjoying the crazy excitement around the game, then those players belong in the game. If Bud wasn't in, I would say, you know what? Then those guys don't belong. But when they essentially turned a blind eye to it, and they probably honestly wanted it, because baseball probably was never bigger than at that moment in time. Yeah, I have a hard time with that. When the commissioner's in and he knew about it and did nothing about it, then I'm all for it. And right now, I could guarantee you, and I can't necessarily say a name, but there are guys in the Hall of Fame right now who did performance-enhancing drugs, and they've already been voted in. And they, maybe people didn't know about it in particular, but, you know, obviously David Ortiz was speculated. But, like, there are people in the Hall of Fame who did PEDs. So I just don't see how you keep certain people out. That's what I don't understand. The policing of this really doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Cody?
It wasn't a unique advantage. Now, the decision to take performance-enhancing substances was a unique decision, but it's not like Barry Bonds had access to something that no other player could get to, right? It wasn't an unfair advantage that him or Clemens or, you know, all of the other people that got put on, what is it, the Mitchell report? I'm getting
that
all
was
my reports.
One of them, yeah,
right. But, you know, if it was a unique advantage like what Houston did in 2017, that's a different story, right? Anybody and everybody can go and get steroids. The three of us could go and get steroids if we really wanted to, right? What is particularly frustrating is, Micah, you mentioned it, baseball was at its peak in 1997, 1998, the home run chase, right? It was, you know, a fury. I mean, I think that's when I really fell in love with the game, And then, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to pick up a team a couple of years later. But baseball writers and journalists profited off of that home run chase. They profited off of the steroids and what Bonds, Sosa, McGuire were doing. And now they're going to be like, oh, well, you took steroids. You weren't pure. You didn't, you know, do it the right way. When we all knew what was going on at that time, right? People don't look like the way that they look like. And so it's really hypocritical for me as well to be able to say, hey, you shouldn't be able to be in the Hall of Fame. All of the things that you did don't count, when it makes it sound like hitting a baseball is easy, right? Like, yeah, those doubles might turn into home runs, but you still have to make contact, man. I haven't, you know, really played baseball at a high level in a long time. I got back into batting cage a couple months ago and the thing went up to like 80 and I was like, get me out of here, dude. I can't do this. Like, this is horrifying just because I haven't seen it in, you know, however many years. But I don't know. Like, we all enjoyed it. We all profited from it. They made the decision to do it. It wasn't a singular decision. Anybody could do it if they wanted to do it. And I guarantee you, if you ask them, you know, removed from the public scrutiny, would you do it again? It'd be hard to say, no, I wouldn't do it again. And then, you know, you remove the players that maybe wouldn't have made it to the majors if they didn't do performance enhancing substances, you know, things that change the course of their lives, their family lives. I bet a lot of them would do it again as well.
See, I'm just never going to be able to come around on it. And a big thing for me with Bonds and Clemens is they're still lying about it. They're not even telling the truth after all these years. And I look at it a little different. Like, I can sympathize in a way with Lance Armstrong because he never would have sniffed a win or even a top 15 finish in the tour if he didn't take it, because everybody else was. Baseball players, you still could have been great. You still could have been Hall of Famers without taking them, and they still did. So, you know, that's kind of partially where I'm at, and selfishly, I've kind of gotten my way. You know, Bonds and Clemens won't get in unless the Veterans Committee puts them in, and it doesn't sound like they will at this point. Players are very anti-cheating. I mean, when Tatis went down with his positive test, his teammates were taking shots at him through the media. You know, they look down on this. And so Joe Morgan passed away recently, but he was on the Veterans Committee up until 2 or 3 years ago. He gave this speech, this really impassioned speech, about how they shouldn't be allowed in as well. So, but go ahead, Cody.
I view the Tatis situation a little bit differently. You know, to kind of borrow one of Micah's point, like, Bud Selig knew that it was going on, turned a blind eye to it. It was running rampant, right? Bonds was an MVP caliber player pre-steroids, right? His time in Pittsburgh, he was an unbelievable player and he got zero nationwide notoriety. So I think that's kind of what turned him onto the stuff. Tatis doing it is, in my opinion, very different. There is a framework, there is a testing system, there is known punishments for doing performance-enhancing substances. If you do performance-enhancing substances in today's ballgame, that is incredibly selfish because you know what the punishment is going to be, right? You know, it was the wild, wild west in the 90s. People were playing it fast and loose. They were trying to get eyes on baseball. They were trying to drum up, you know, national stories. I don't view those two to be very similar.
Well, I mean, it is what it is, and we stand where we stand. I think Charlie is somewhere, you know, in my side of the spectrum with this, but our crew is largely, you know, supportive of all those guys getting in, and that's fine. That's why we're here. We're not here to agree with each other. Yeah, so we'll see. I think within the next week or two, we're going to have, we're going to figure out who the next class is. I hope Todd Helton is in it because he's got a career 416 on base, and I know Colorado, blah, 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 but you know, he was still a good player. That's the guy I really want to get in. And there's a few others as well, but all right, let's wrap on that. I thought this would be a quicker show. I always think that, and it never is. Yeah, we're at the 59th minute now. So We'll be back as things develop. Nothing seems imminent, but we'll see. And I think worst case, we'll be back Sunday night either way. So everyone have a good weekend. Should be a little more boring because, you know, it's not New Year's. But is this weekend playoff weekend or is there one more NFL weekend? One more, right?
Yeah, we added week 18, so we have regular seasons this weekend.
Yeah.
A couple of win and in scenarios and playoff tiebreakers and whatnot. So there's some intrigue, but it's not playoffs yet.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, again, we will be back with you soon. Take care.